Number one, be invisible.
I don't understand how I got here. Life is oppressive. Not why you steal.
Two, only left with people you trust.
I feel so alone here. Who doesn't?
It's gonna be okay.
And three, whatever you do, don't get caught.
Come with me.
Holy shit.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. No cursing, though. No cursing. Let's start the show.
Early for that.
Welcome to Cord Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Brian Brushwood. And what did we watch for our opening little snippet there?
That is a new trailer for a Netflix series called Trinkets. It's about these three teenage girls who are shoplifters and meet up at Shoplifters Anonymous. And I guess they're trying to recover, or maybe not. So I think that's
there
coming
seem
in
to be a
early
lot
June.
Of TV series based on women doing crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got that. You got, what is it, Good Girls on NBC.
Uh-huh.
Certainly
Orange. I know there's another one on like TNT or something.
Oranges, yeah.
Yeah.
Weeds, infamously.
It's Trent. It's a thing.
which means it's already too late. Get ready for dogs doing crimes.
Well, folks, we got lots of things to tell you about, including some good news for those of you who didn't like the look of Sonic, and some possible good news for those of you who are Brian Brushwood in our primary target. BuzzFeed reports that Lita Kalogridis, who wrote Alita Battle Angel, also is writing one of the upcoming Avatar sequels, is close to finishing the first script of a potential Knights of the Old Republic trilogy. BuzzFeed says that Benioff and Weiss are writing their own scripts, and we know from Disney that Benioff and Weiss are going to do the first of a Star Wars trilogy in December 2022. So it would seem that Benioff and Weiss would not be working on a Knights of the Old Republic trilogy. However, I don't know, maybe they changed their minds or something, Brian. Because everybody seemed to assume that if there was a Knights of the Old Republic trilogy, it would be Benioff and Weiss because Game of Thrones, I guess.
Yeah, and it would make a lot of sense to think that way because Knights of the Old Republic has, you know, it takes place in a more civilized era. More of what we imagined the prequels were going to look like instead of a bureaucratic nightmare. It's almost, in my opinion, it felt a little bit like Dune almost, you know, warring houses and factions and stuff. The Sith are represented as sort of their surrogates for the empires, but they're basically knights with they call them vibro swords, but swords basically. So it had a kind of medieval feel to the whole thing. So Benioff and Weiss might be a good match for it, but you know, all of these are outside reports, and if we're hearing one thing, then we're hearing another thing. All of this is very, very mushy. I mean, remember that what's his name? Rob Schraub was the director for the Lego Movie 2 for the majority of production, and then suddenly he wasn't, and then he ended up credited like as the number 12 story contributor or whatever. So
yeah,
it's like
right.
All of this stuff is just a bunch of dumb words until it's not.
So the idea that a Knights of the Old Republic trilogy would be one of the two, whether it's Rian Johnson's or Benioff and Weiss, I think is delightful to a lot of people. What if it's neither? What if this is like straight to Disney Plus? What if it's animated movies? What if it's something else entirely?
I mean, I could be talked into it. The nice thing, here's the crazy part, is even in Knights of the Old Republic, it was already a fun, refreshing landscape to play with because everything was new and yet also familiar, right? You had no expectations of any characters or stories. But then in that game, they were constantly talking about the legends of these people from 1,000 years before that. And so when something paid off from all of that backstory setup, it's a lot like what we experienced with Game of Thrones, because you start it and everyone's talking about how dragons used to be a thing and then dragons become a thing. And you're like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Like that experience is a lot of what made up the game, the games Knights of the Old Republic.
And it reminds me of what HBO is doing with Song of Ice and Fire, right? The Game of Thrones prequel is going to take place 1,000 years before Game of Thrones. so that the only things they're bound by are a couple of, you know, a couple of flashback sequences to the children of the forest creating the, you know, the White Walkers, et cetera. The plot can kind of go wherever it wants to, unlike prequels that happen very close to the thing they're a prequel to, which tend to be so hard to do because you're bound by, well, everybody knows where we're going, right? So Knights of the Old Republic would give them the same freedom of, yeah, it's 1,000 years before the events of all the movies we've seen so far, but really all we know is it was a more civilized age, and there was a video game that might give you some spoilers, but they don't even need to be bound by that.
Yes, correct. That is correct. This is one of those rare cases where they could take the name and build a totally different world, and I wouldn't mind, because one of the appeals of the Star Wars universe has always been that it's a big, fat, wide galaxy, and there's plenty of room to play.
Is Revan a character from the game?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Revan and Malak. And
So they could be just a kid's series called That's So Revan.
Okay. That was very Malak of you. I'm gonna give them a lot of wiggle room on this. As a fan of somebody who played both of the first two games and played a fair bit of the MMO, I think the first game has a good enough experience that you could get away with just some version of a straight telling of that story, and I think it would be a very, very good first season.
Yeah, I mean, really, there's nothing much to go on here. Leta Kalagridis has done some good stuff, hasn't done a lot of stuff, but this is the kind of writer that is in a position to wow us. So I wouldn't make any judgments one way or the other on that. And the rest of it's all hearsay also, except for the fact that we know Benioff and Weiss are going to put out a movie in December 2022, because that was officially said by Disney. So you let your imaginations run wild with this one. Could be fun. We'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, folks, if you want to keep the speculation coming, if you want us to keep an eye on it, you have to bribe us.
Okay, technically it's called a transaction for services rendered, and technically that would make you either the customer or the boss. We would like to think of you as a boss, and we would like you to join the 1,338 beautiful bosses that we have by heading on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Look, man, if you think this show is worth $1 an episode, if you think that we should split it up with Brian getting 45 cents, Tom getting 45 cents, and Bryce getting 2 nickels, then we can make that happen as long as you guys go to patreon.com/cordkillers. Special benefits, special RSS feeds, and access to our super secret bosses only after talk.
Yeah, we will keep you up to date so you know when you need to pick a service or subscribe to a service or drop a service. That's what we do. Just slip us a cool Washington or even a Lincoln. We'll do. Let's talk about how to watch.
What's funny is when you said a Washington, I thought of a quarter. And when you said a Lincoln, I thought of a penny.
Oh, man, that is a wide open door for people. Like, here you go.
Yeah.
You said a Lincoln. Sorry, Patreon no longer allows pledges less than a dollar. A startup called Synalytic is using machine learning trained on information about a film's themes, key talent, and historical data. So they feed that into a machine learning algorithm to train it up. And that's, if you're not familiar with AI, machine learning is give me things to look for patterns, I'll get better at finding patterns. So they give it all this data and say, all right, now tell us how a movie would perform. So they give it the historical data saying, these movies had these kinds of people, these themes, these actors, and performed this way. Now if we give you new stuff, you can predict how this movie would go. CEO Tobias Quessier told The Verge, you can compare them separately, compare them in a package, model out, say, both scenarios with Emma Watson and Jennifer Lawrence starring, and see for this particular film which has better implications, even for different territories. So you could say, okay, I've got a romantic comedy with an adventure subplot, and if I put Emma Watson in, it'll do well in these markets, and if I put Jennifer Lawrence in the lead, it does well in these markets. There are other companies doing this as well. Belgium's Scriptbook tries to predict success based on script analysis and actually did pretty good for movies in 2017 and 2018. They guessed the profitability accurately retrospectively at 86%. Israel's company called Vault tracks trailer reception online to predict what demographics a movie might appeal to. And a company called Pilot forecasts box office revenues up to 18 months before a film's launch. Some of the challenges talked about in this Verge article are that if you train a machine learning only on past historical data, it will not be able to account very well for shifts in taste as people get tired of vampire movies, you know, that sort of thing. And nobody wants to admit to using it. Like in Hollywood, one of the things you get to say is like, yeah, I've got the special sauce. I know a hit when I see it. And if you're like, I know a hit when I see it because I subscribe to Cinelytic, you lose some cachet.
Yeah, well, keep in mind kind of what's old is new again. I just read a book called An Economist Walks into a Brothel, and it's all about high risk pockets where non-economists figure out how to mitigate risks. And among them, she talks about big wave surfers. She talks about the sex work trade in legal areas in Nevada. And she talks about the story of, I forget his first name, something Kavanaugh, of Relativity, who insisted that he had the magic algorithm, all these Excel spreadsheets that figured out what made for winners. And he was able to peg enough major hits in a row, and he got little consulting fees here or there, that at some point somebody gave him $60 million to buy him out of his company. And he was like, finally, I get to start investing my own money in my own magic sauce. And he proceeded to buy a bunch of major duds. And at the end of the day, it all boils down to past performance can't predict future interest. Now, I think it's not a stretch for us to say that superhero movies will not be as powerful as they were in the last 10 years, in the next 10 years, that there'll be some kind of novel alternate thing. And I'm not going to say that any of these services don't have value. What they do is they very precisely explained the story of human beings' tastes so far, and they are models of where they might go, but nobody knows with a capital K what's going to make for the next big hit.
One of the interesting things about machine learning that I think gets lost a lot of times in the either the hype about it or the skepticism about it is it's really good at canceling out irrelevant factors, right? It may not be able to predict changes in taste very well if it's only trained on historical data, but it might be able to tell cycles and say like, oh, well, I see that vampire movies always go like this, so it's probably going to be like this for a while and then go back up. It's better at finding those things because we don't know how it does what it does. We just give it data and it finds patterns that even great pattern matching things like our human brains often don't see. That said, it also makes mistakes because it's not perfect. And so I think where I'm going with this, Brian, is that a company like UK's Ingenious Group, using it to guide its investments, probably smart. Like, what does the algorithm say? Okay, that's interesting. And we see some other things that indicate that might be true, working as a tiebreaker when you're like, well, we could go with this one or we could go with that one. I think using it as a piece of information, also how it's used in medicine, honestly, as a diagnostic aid, not as the final word on your condition, where a doctor can take that information with everything else they know. I think that's where this is probably useful.
Yeah, and I can see there have been previous deep dives, and these have been human-led deep dives that find out little things like I think at some point Drew Barrymore was the most overpaid underperforming actor in the world or whatever. One of the ones that made me smile was that somebody figured out that by the numbers, if you're looking just at the quality of film, John Goodman is the best supporting actor in history, and he should never have a lead role again, because the highest rated movie that he was the lead actor in was King Ralph. But then when you look at the list of everything he was the supporting actor in, it's like they're all off the charts. Although I think that was before 10 Cloverfield Lane. No, I guess he's not the lead. He's the supporting.
He's supporting there. Yeah, right?
So anyway, those kind of insights, I totally agree that the AIs are going to be able to bubble up with factoids that'll inform people who are putting together projects.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating stuff. All right, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
I like this thing. It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Warner Brothers announced a live-action adaptation of Akira is coming, directed by Taika Waititi, coming out May 21st, 2021. Katsuhiro Otomo's 1982 manga was made into anime in 1988, and people have been trying to make it into a live-action film for decades. Warner got the rights in 2002. They've had at least 5 different directors attached, 10 different writers at one point or another. And it looks like this is finally going to happen, resulting in an explosion of text messages from Bryce and Brian in excitement.
Oh, my goodness. You guys know that Akira is rather precious to me. Downstairs in my office is an actual production cell from 1988's Akira that I got from Streamline Pictures in 1992, I think. Look, this is one of those where I'm going to keep my expectations tempered. We've all been thwarted before, but I'm not going to go into the dark territory where everybody who's hating on the idea of a Cowboy Bebop live action, that's because they believe that joy is dead and that that cynicism should rule the day. I refuse. I believe in Taika Waititi, mainly because I love everything that he's done. And I believe that Akira will be a rich and wonderful landscape. And he actually, now that I think about it, the Akira crazyscape is an awful lot like Thor Ragnarok, and he did a great job on that. I'm very optimistic.
I'm optimistic as well. His direction of episodes on the What We Do in the Shadows has not disappointed me. Although Jemaine Clement is really running the show over there, but he's involved. Thor Ragnarok, like you say, should not have been as fun as it was. There's just no reason for that except for Taika Waititi. Why not? Let's give it a go. And I don't have as much invested as you both, but I also love Taika Waititi, so I'm in too.
Bryce, are you optimistic?
I like Taika Waititi, but I also know that in the long history of anime adaptations, it is fraught with very little success.
Yeah, you understand that the at bats of knocking it out of the park is about 1 in 100,
if even worse odds. Yeah. So we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Bryce. We needed that voice. in this conversation.
I mean, it's like if you think of anime making the leap and knocking it out of the park, you've got what? You could make a case for Edge of Tomorrow. You could make a case for The Matrix. Both of those kind of.
But not direct anime adaptations.
Correct. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct. Mm-hmm.
And you think of recently, like in Japan, live action adaptations do a little better because they're very tight to the source material. But but it's things like Netflix's Death Note, which strayed a lot from the original story, was also just kind of poorly paced and poorly put together. So I don't know. We'll see. I guess it helps that Akira was originally a movie and not a series.
It was a series of graphic novels.
But I mean, a visual movie.
Correct. Film. It did make it. It blew out as a feature film. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Well, in other news of beloved properties, King Killer Chronicles, the prequel TV series to the books, Name of the Wind, etc., have their first draft done. Series writer John Rogers tweeted May 23rd that he has completed the first draft of the screenplays for season 1. This is a Showtime series adapting the Patrick Rothfuss novels, with Lin-Manuel Miranda producing and writing the music. It's scheduled to start filming this year for a 2020 release.
So this will not have our main character. It will not have...
It will have Quoth's parents.
I think this is a smarter play than I would have thought to have made, because as I read the books, I loved two things. I loved the story of Quoth, but also I loved the world that they created, and I loved the very precise explanations of how the systems of magic worked. And if they can not try to do all that at once and instead give us a series that has a fine story, but the real star of the show is the world, you know, talking about sympathetic magic and efficiencies. And, you know, now you're levitating a coin, but it takes 5 times the amount of effort to get it, you know, like magical pulleys, basically. And then also give us the songs, because, you know, music and stories matter a lot in this, the legends, and then tell us the story of Quoth in a world that we now already understand. That could be really fantastic.
And apparently the movies, which are supposed to adapt the 3 books, although only 2 of them are out, are sort of hitting rocky ground right now. They lost some personnel, and those aren't going to happen as soon. But I think that's good. I hesitate to do the George R. R. Martin comparison because that's unfair to George R. R. Martin and Patrick Rothfuss. But Patrick Rothfuss is hard at work on the third book in the trilogy. And there was some concern in fandom that if they started putting out movies, would we have a Game of Thrones situation where the third movie has to come out before the book is done? I think this is a great situation. Have a prequel series that feeds all kinds of things about my love of the book, like you're saying, Brian, but does virtually nothing to tread on the ability of Patrick Rothfuss to tell the story in the third book the way he wants to tell it.
Yeah, like imagine, if everything was reversed. Imagine if we learned all about Westeros and we had taken a tour over a place with some other narrative, and then Game of Thrones started, and immediately we're like, oh, we're in Westeros. We must be up in the north, and oh, we're heading over to King's Landing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's fascinating. I think that would be, and I think Game of Thrones had to be a series. I think you can do the Kingkiller Chronicles proper as movies. There's a lot going on in those too.
Yeah, and I will say one final note: if you are going to do them as movies, man, oh man, would it be helpful if you don't have to explain a bunch of the magic, the world, the locations, the intrigue, the who's fighting who with what, and what these guys are. Like, that'd be great. If
at least simplify it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
To say, like, really, you should watch the prequels if you want to know more. But here, you know, yeah. There's a trailer out for the Netflix production for Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, headed to Netflix August 30th. It's a prequel following three young Gelflings, Ryan, voiced by Taron Egerton, Deet by Natalie Emanuel, and Bria by Anya Taylor-Joy, as they navigate a Thraw still under the sinister clutches of the villainous Skeksis.
they did. I like that little nod they did. Spoiler alert to the 40-year-old movie, The Dark Crystal. It ends with the two different races merging and becoming whole again. So I like that this is a prequel because it implies that, number one, I like that it's a prequel and that it implies a continuity of everything and that there might be more characters we get to meet, but also that it also implies that we're not going to get the same ending, that this is a different narrative, that the Skeksis will always be Skeksis and that the Native American ripoffs they'll continue to be wise.
I think too, like we just talked about how hard it is to do a prequel that takes place close to the thing you're the prequel of. But this trailer gives me hope that they've figured that out. And I think, like you say, part of the reason is the story they've chosen to tell.
All right. Can I take you on a separate side jag?
Yeah, sure.
I played for my 11-year-old. We're on a nostalgic trip. You know, she's basically saying, like, show me good movies. And I go back and we watched the beginning. We watched this trailer and I was like, oh, look at the original. And I showed her the first 2 minutes of the Dark Crystal. And it's like, another world, another time in the Age of Wonder. This land was green and good. And then the crystal cracked. And once more, they will replenish themselves, cheat death again. And I'm like, man, that doesn't sound anything like the samples I remember from 1998's Crystal Method Trip Like I Do song. So then I load up that song that has those samples, and it's like, it's clearly a different dude with a different cadence, with a different emphasis. And I'm like, these aren't samples at all. Did they just hire somebody to read the lines to the opening of the Dark Crystal? With just a more, manly, powerful narrator's voice. This is a mystery that I want all of our fans to solve.
Yes,
and write us at cordkillers@gmail.com.
Go get them gumshoes. I want to know the answer to that, too. That's crazy. Paramount has delayed the release of Sonic the Hedgehog by 3 months to allow the visual effects team to redesign Sonic. There was quite a bit of criticism about the way Sonic looked when the trailer came out, and director Jeff Fowler promised a redesign earlier this month. So they're taking the time to do it right. Sonic will now come to theaters February 14th, 2020.
Conspiracy Theory Corner with Brian. Hey, it seems to me that if you knew that your movie was testing poorly and it was really bad, it seems like you would seize on literally any excuse to delay it that didn't imply that your movie was bad. And then that way you could say, you could put out a trailer, have everyone say, like, the teeth are the wrong shape. And you could say, oh, golly, teeth. Oh, you're so right. Oh, the stupid teeth. Oh, I hate those teeth so much. Give us a lot of time to fix those teeth so that we can get you the perfect movie with the right teeth that you deserve.
I think this is really interesting. So let's do a thought experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of releasing a trailer and having people angry at Sonic, what if we just got a silent, not silent, but a very like, you know, unheralded announcement that, oh, Sonic has been moved to February 2020 because of scheduling reasons, which is usually what happens in the situation you're describing, right? They underplay it and just say like, oh, no, you know, scheduling and things, we've pushed it off, and people start suspecting like there must be a problem with the movie. That's why they're pushing it to February. February is a dead zone for movies. This is genius if you're right. If Fowler was like, hey, don't do that. Let's put out a trailer. I'll screw up the teeth. If you want to get real conspiratorial,
well, I wouldn't say that they screwed up.
Let's lean into it. Let's get the internet will get outraged at anything. Let's react to it, and that will be a better story.
Yeah, in magic we call it if you want to hide it, paint it red. So because you don't tend to ask more questions after you've gotten a satisfying answer. So if they just said we're going to move it to February, then you have a question with no answer. Whereas if you release this, you're like, look. It's not great. There's going to be some one thing that everybody freaks out about and latches onto. Whatever that thing is, we'll use that. We'll loudly announce that we're so great, we're going to fix it because of that thing.
The reason I doubt that's the real story is I can't imagine Paramount executives agreeing to that, but you never know. You never know.
I mean, it wouldn't be like a plan from the beginning. It would be the kind of thing where it's like they all know that they have a garbage project and they know it's in a garbage state. Yeah. And then they put it out.
It has to be a moment in the boardroom, in the conference room where they're like, are we really going to do this? Yeah, why not? Screw it. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, well, I think they just put it out, and then it's the Monday morning moment where they're like, guys, you're seeing what they're doing on the internet. Everyone at this table knows that the movie's got huge problems. Why don't we take this teeth thing and just run with it as an excuse? And just we look magnanimous, and we get, you know, 3 more months to fix this garbage fire.
Yeah, yeah. A teaser trailer for the television series Picard, starring Patrick Stewart as Picard, came out. It shows a vineyard. A woman voiceover asking Picard questions about why he left Starfleet. She also mentions he commanded the greatest rescue armada in history. It's coming to CBS All Access in the U.S., Space Channel in Canada, and Amazon Prime Video internationally.
I, after watching this teaser, am increasingly convinced that the series is basically True Detective Season 3. I think this is all after the fact. He's being investigated or... deposed or interviewed or something, and there's an epic story, and maybe there's here or there, you know, because they can use his voice, but the story could be told in flashbacks to all the, because he's in charge of a fleet, so he's just like, why did you send them to the Delta Quadrant? And then it's just like, then we're mainly following people doing their stories, and then we see him, he's like, well, at the time I thought this was right, and then cut to voiceover, listen, all fleet, this is me, the disembodied voice of Picard from 15 years ago, I demand we do the thing for this, and then
you could take footage from Insurrection, First Contact, etc., and modify it. You know, they can do a lot of de-aging and stuff already, too. So you might be able to use some of that. I'm fascinated by this idea.
I'm going to strike while the prediction engine is hot. I was so close with the Samwell Tarly stuff that I'm going to make my call that it's True Detective Season 3.
Keep that ball rolling, because whether this is what actually happens or not, I love the idea of a Picard space True Detective situation. If they can pull it off, the limiting factor would be a CBS All Access budget. But they got some Prime Video money in there as well. So who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Let's roll through some of the other things that happened over the past 2 weeks, because we were off for the Memorial Day holiday last week. NBC News is the last of the U.S. Big Three to bring out its own free streaming news service, NBC News Now, that will stream content from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday. Also goes live during breaking news. That's out right now. Season 3, the final season of Jessica Jones, coming to Netflix June 14th. The CBS All Access show The Good Fight will come to television, to broadcast television, June 16th. Season 7 and the final season for Orange is the New Black comes to Netflix July 26th. Trailers out for Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's the one that stars Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate. That hits theaters July 26th. Glow Season 3. coming to Netflix August 9th, and season 6 of Silicon Valley will be its last season, with 7 episodes coming later this year. They haven't got an exact date. Finally, Netflix announced an animated series based on Magic the Gathering, the trading card game, produced by Joe and Anthony Russo. The Russos will oversee the creation of the storyline, and then Henry Gilroy, who worked on Star Wars Rebels, and Jose Molina from The Tick will write and be showrunners.
I think there's tremendous potential in a Magic the Gathering series. As long as the story's fine, the world building is great. And the ability to essentially, because you're playing a game that's built out of lore for a story that doesn't exist, it's a weird bottom-up way to do everything. It's like they've built all the lore and they've built the world. We just don't have a story.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, that's every video game movie, too.
Well, okay. Hey, it worked out all right for Tomb Raider.
Yeah. Warcraft was a big hit in China. So,
yeah.
You know. What have you been had your eyes on lately, Brian?
Man, we got 2 weeks of stuff that we've been watching. Me and my 11-year-old, like, she is really into just being brought up to speed. Like, it's as though she walked up and was like, all right, Dad, now's the time. What are all the movies I need to know? So we watched Jaws. We watched Close Encounters. We watched Poltergeist.
Oh, wow, cool.
She finally got into Stranger Things, which, by the way, all in one day, Poltergeist, Stranger Things, and Close Encounters, all about parents having their children supernaturally kidnapped. So at one point, Josie asked, Dad, why are you constantly looking like you're about to cry? I'm like, shut up. And so now she went through all of Stranger Things. Now she's watching Logan, and I'm this close, and I think I figured out how to do it. We got halfway through the first episode of Firefly with my 15-year-old, and she wanted to leave, but it was just after the part where they explained, they unboxed River, and I was like, hey, I'm going to jump to the future. Just watch the first 10 minutes of the movie, and you actually see that moment that her brother busts her out of jail. And I think that might have tipped the scales into her watching all the rest of Firefly.
Excellent. What about E.T.? You bringing that one in?
No, E.T. is garbage. It does not hold up.
It really fits with Stranger Things, though.
Yes, it does. I tried to watch it as an adult, and it was just painful. Also, I did watch the Deadwood movie. We'll talk about that. I watched Godzilla. Good God, what a! If you were one of the millions,
if you're not getting spoiler in time early, I'm sorry, you'll have to wait till Wednesday for our conversation about Godzilla. This is gonna be fun.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So you watched it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay.
You didn't see Tom's tweet about it.
Wait, I didn't. What did you say?
No, great. No, don't worry about it.
Really?
We'll find out.
Okay. All right. This will be fun.
Good Omens is the thing I want to mention. That is the series on Prime Video based on the book by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. And Eileen and I have blown through 3 of the 6 already. We just started watching it this weekend. And we don't binge as fast as we used to, but this one's really been fun. So I highly, highly recommend it. As a lover of the book, it's actually sometimes feels too obvious because I've read the book, but Eileen's loving it, and the characterizations, especially David Tennant, I think are fantastic. So Bryce, I know you gave it a plus one as well.
Yeah, I think I got about as far as you, and I really enjoy it. My only like knock on it is that I don't like the pacing. Is that we are going back in time, forwards in time. The end of the world is on this day. The beginning of universe is it's kind of a lot. It's a very sort of dense show. But the relationship between Az and Crowley is great. I love it. It's very unique. I like it.
Is this an Amazon joint?
Yeah,
Amazon
Prime.
Exactly. All right, Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a nostalgic anime pick in our inbox. It read, hey guys, growing up in the 70s, I would race home at school to watch the next episode of Star Blazers, the American version of Space Battleship Yamato series from Japan. It was my first exposure to anime and a serialized TV show. It was a very early serialized TV show. I recently discovered that the series was redone a few years ago and rebranded Star Blazers 2199, and I've been watching it on the Funimation website, and it is hitting all the right nostalgia buttons. They have 2 seasons available, 2199 and 2202. They appear to be pretty close to the original storylines, as best as I can remember, with a little modernization. If you remember the original series at all, I highly recommend it. Thanks, Scott from Houston. Hey, thanks, Scott. Star Blazers' new series, Space Battleship Yamato 2199 and 2202, with 52 episodes, are streaming now on Funimation. You might need their subscription service for that. Thank you, Scott.
Very cool. If you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Brian, tell me a story.
I'll tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was a middling wizard who traveled the country entertaining folks with the Ledger Domain. And then one day he was zapped by the radioactive lightning of the internet. Suddenly, millions knew his name and learned his tricks from him. Realizing that he could only barrel forward with this newfound power, he bought a haunted 7-acre compound, formerly filled with nudists and cultists, where he decided to build a wizard's tower to hide his three princesses from the rest of the world. And there he would train acolytes and create a new generation of rogues to conquer the world. And to do this, he developed a very powerful product called a $39 mystery box, available at scamstuff.com. Look, here's the thing. If you haven't checked out scamstuff.com, we've got a bunch of cool spy gear. We got magic tricks. We got all kinds of fun stuff. We recently put together a box that I'm not supposed to give specific numbers, but it's about $100 plus of retail value goodies that you get for $39. We were able to find some fun stuff here or there at very affordable prices. Know that all of this funds the 7-acre compound that we are building out and eventually will be shooting this very show from. But it's a really good one. And of course, all of those, you know, crap in a box, monthly subscription things, they're all built on the idea that you can't make a return if you're not happy. We feel good enough that we're like, if you don't like it, send it back. So it's like gambling, but there is no gambling. And
it's also not like super cheap stuff, cheaper
like
than
gambling,
the price of the
but
box.
When you lose, you can get your money back from the dealer.
Yeah, exactly, right? Imagine playing craps and then you lose all your money. You're like, backsies. Mulligan, I call backsies. Yes.
That was no fun. I want my money back.
That's what you get to do with the mystery box jackpot. Just head over to scamstuff.com. They're $39.99. I'm really pleased with what we were able to pull on this one.
All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Warner Brothers has cast Robert Pattinson as the new The Batman. The Batman is scheduled to come to theaters June 25th, 2021. Matt Reeves directing. He's the one who did the most recent Planet of the Apes movies, like War for Planet of the Apes, etc. Robert Pattinson, best known from Twilight, Brian.
Man, I'm so glad that all the grandparents can finally be using the right words when they say, are you going to go see The Batman? also, I remember being around when everybody raised their eyebrows at Michael Keaton being Batman, and he's still my Batman to this very day. So I'm sure it'll be fine. I bet he fights all the bats.
I'm sure he will fight them all. I actually think it's a decent casting. Robert Pattinson has been doing a bunch of indie films trying to get Twilight out of his association, and it's a nice return for him to tackle something big again that is separate from being a sparkly vampire. And I'm willing to give him all the chances in the world. I can't wait to see it.
I mean, just as long as they explain whatever happened to Batman's parents. The Fire TV recast DVR, which works with an antenna, has added the ability to record a show across multiple networks. This way you can record reruns showing on different networks without having multiple season passes and multiple versions of some episodes. To accommodate all those new episodes, Amazon also added the ability to use a USB hard drive to add additional storage.
Yes, I hear the TiVo fan out there yelling, we've had this for years, we know. But, you know, people like Fire TV, this is a good thing for them, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah, yes, because you've had it, you should be happy. It's kind of like when Overwatch came out and it's like, this is just Team Fortress 2. And I'm like, yeah, didn't you really enjoy Team Fortress 2? Aren't you glad there's more games that are like Team Fortress 2?
Yeah. Hulu says it has 82 million viewers on its 28 million customer accounts, so just shy of 3 viewers per account. So that's like families and stuff. 70% of those viewers are on the ad-supported version of Hulu. That's the one you pay $6 a month for and still get limited ads. Hulu's also talking up a lot of its targeted ads, saying that they want to help people like food delivery services target people who are binging. So if they tell you're watching multiple episodes in a row, they would serve up a like, hey, want a pizza delivered right now? Something like that. An option for advertisers for viewers who have just watched two consecutive episodes, they might give you the option to watch a 90-second ad in exchange for having no ads interrupt the next episode that you watch.
I remember they used to have that early on in Hulu. You could say, hey, do you want to watch a longer ad? And you'll get no ads in this program. I also, the other thing about this is, how many do they break out how many of these users are from like that big Spotify promotion that it seems like they're always doing?
No, they didn't mention that. I wonder, that's a good point.
Because if you get Spotify Premium, you get the ad supported Hulu.
Yeah.
So
bundled in.
Fubo TV announced partnership with fantasy sports provider FanDuel to integrate betting data into Fubo's streaming platform. Features live right now in New Jersey with plans to roll out to other states eventually where legal to do so. FanDuel's betting data will become integrated into Fubo TV, including under Fubo TV branded channels and FanDuel's TVG channels, plus on content detail pages in the programming guide and elsewhere. It expects other channels to allow it eventually. The deal is for data only, no click through to place bets. So basically, if I'm following this correctly, in World Series of Poker, they were having a really hard time of like how to tell a story on that. And then one day they figured out, put a camera, let us see their pocket cards, throw up on the screen what the percentages are. You now don't actually know how the round's going to turn out, but you have a good idea of what each player thinks they know about the situation. Likewise, in a real-time, you know, sports betting environment, you get pretty close to an efficient prediction engine of how everything's going to play out. So if you see those expected percentages, then that lets you, the viewer, get quicker to understanding the stakes and the likelihood of everything being pulled off.
You know, now that you've brought that up, I'm wondering, like, why don't these channels just make deals with FanDuel and put it in the channel? TVG is a horse racing channel. One assumes that they're showing you betting odds right up till race time. That's just the way it works. So I'm curious what this FanDuel integration adds to that.
I would imagine
expands the amount of data that you're getting.
I would imagine that there are entanglements based around the fact that FanDuel is a betting platform that actually, so because FanDuel is fueled by actual betting, then the only place to put that data and integrate it into the story would be on another betting platform. So there's no expectation of one thing or the other. Whereas like if it was just on NBC Sunday afternoon, all of a sudden you would have a legitimate case for someone to say, why are you putting betting information, something that's illegal in my state, on your channel?
Well, and that's the other part. There's so many legal issues. This is only in New Jersey, like you said, for now. And there may be a thing that, because I'm a Fubo subscriber, I can say, yes, show me FanDuel stuff. That's cool. I'm even a FanDuel subscriber, right? Whereas a broadcast network would have to be like, well, everybody who gets this anywhere we're, you know, available will see it. And that could be people who don't want to see it or haven't opted in. So maybe that's part
also of it. Also, like NBC has policies where they're prohibited, or all of the companies have policies where it's against the law for me to take out an ad saying gamble illegally at briansite.org, you know, and like they won't take that.
FanDuel has to nimbly navigate those waters because they sponsor sports broadcasts. But
right.
Yeah, we need Mitsula on this case. I should have messaged him before we did the show. For 79 long days in the spring of 1985, Coke had a new recipe called New Coke, until it relented and brought back classic Coke, and then New Coke eventually faded from the shelves. But it's back. The Duffer brothers wrote New Coke into the next season of Stranger Things, set in 1985, and Coca-Cola has released a limited number of 12-ounce cans of New Coke using that 1985 formula. So it's old New Coke. Free cans of New Coke will be available in upside-down inspired vending machines in select cities starting in New York.
That's a smart, adorable platform. That's good cross-promotion.
I think it's actually the thing that impressed me the most is that Coca-Cola was like, it's been long enough. It's okay for us to poke fun at ourselves over this horrible fiasco that happened in our past.
Keep in mind,
everyone who decided it is no longer with the company. Let's embrace it. We can only win.
Keep in mind also, for those who haven't read the deeper story, it wasn't a failure of formulation. It was a failure of marketing, because before New Coke was introduced, they had previously changed their formula 6 times. They just didn't make a big deal about how they were changing it. And this time they did make a big deal, and they were like, ooh, we shouldn't have made a big deal about that.
Yeah. Have a new Coke on me. I don't know if I'm going to run into one of these vending machines, but I'd totally get one if I did.
Listen, I can report this story honestly because I am not married to anyone who works for Rotten Tomato, who is changing how it calculates its audience scores. There are, although I am reading the words written by somebody. Rotten Tomatoes is changing how it calculates its audience scores. These are the ones with the popcorn icons next to them, not the Rotten or Fresh Tomato scores based on critics' reviews, which is more famous. Recently, the company stopped user reviews from being posted until after the movie premiered. Now, when you leave a review, it will ask you if you want to verify that you've seen the movie. If you are verified, your review will count towards the audience score. If not, you could still leave the review, but it just won't count towards the score. At the moment, you can only verify you bought a ticket through Rotten Tomatoes' sister site, Fandango, Smart Synergy. However, Rotten Tomatoes says that it's working with AMC Regal and Cinemark to verify purchases direct from the chains later this year.
Yes, my wife is the director of video production for Fandango, which includes Rotten Tomatoes. And not only Smart Synergy, but Easy Synergy. when you have a somewhat unified product development arena.
Sure, well, and I'm certain that's a technological, you know, slam dunk where it's like...
It's both, hey, right?
Hey,
yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Fanny, send me that data. This guy buy that ticket? Yeah, he did. All right. Yeah, you count, bro.
This is interesting because it is... now being used by, for instance, Warner Brothers on Godzilla. Not a very good Rotten Tomatoes score, but a high verified audience score. And the audience score now feels like something that you can be proud of more than the old audience score, which was like, well, but who knows, you know, that could be gamed easily, et cetera. So I'm curious how this will affect perceptions of Rotten Tomatoes and those sort of scores. It is weird, though, if you're not buying your tickets through Fandango, that you're like, well, I saw the movie, but I can't get a verified review on Rotten Tomatoes.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they already have all these ticket pickup kiosks and often, you know, paid for by Fandango. I wouldn't be surprised if on the way out of a movie, you could just plug in like, this is my ticket, I just watched that movie, and then they could have a very detailed, very valuable breakdown, essentially turn first run audiences into test audiences about what they did right and wrong, and then all of a sudden you get a, you know, they're going to know the demographics of all these people, and that'll just make Rotten Tomatoes recommendation engine even better because it'll know who I am. It'll give me the critics thing that's it's bread and butter, but then it's like, I know who you are, Brian Brushwood. And I know that these 10,000 people who match your demographics in these ways and your previous tastes, even though it says 20% fresh, you personally are going to love this movie. Now go. Like there might be a lot of power in that.
Yeah. They're going to have to do a lot of work to make this verified score feel like it's a representation, though, because even if they get AMC, Regal, and Cinemark, even if they, you know, they get all of their international regions, you know, Fandango operates in Brazil and a few other countries, they're going to be countries they don't operate in. There's Atom here in the United States, which is one of their big competitors. That Atom is likely not going to play with this. We'll see. Maybe they will. But it's never going to have everything on board. So I'm curious about that myself. All right, let's get to some dispatches from the front. Chip was talking to a coworker who was complaining about DirecTV Now because he was having problems with it and he needed a service with Hallmark Channel. And so Chip suggested PlayStation View, to which his coworker said, "Man, but I don't have a PlayStation." And Chip immediately started laughing and told him he didn't need one. He looked at me confused and said, "Wow, that is a really misleading name, Ben." Flash forward to today, I talked to him again, and he's loving PlayStation View. He said the app is way more reliable. He likes the guide better. And to top it off, they carry all three Hallmark channels. My coworker may not be a listener, but he is benefiting from the great work you guys do on the show. Thank you, Chip.
Yeah. So should we start like a betting pool on how long until they drop the PlayStation part and just call it View?
Just Sony View. You know, that's, yeah, and View be the way you refer to it. That would make perfect sense.
Yeah, wait, 4 months, 8 months, 10 months?
Oh, with Sony, maybe never. because there's somebody who's like, yes, but PlayStation branding.
Anthony writes in saying the British TV place list every month, the new British TV shows coming to America and where you can watch them, whether it's on a streaming service or on local TV. So basically you go to thebritishtvplace.com and then there's an analog called the Down Under TV place, which is the same thing for Aussie and Kiwi TV shows, thedownundertvplace.com.
Nice tip, Anthony. Thank you for that. Then we got TS from NC, who, with the help of other podcasts, now identified as an expert on daily tech news, science fiction and fantasy reading recommendations, and, thanks to us, the cord-cutting revolution. He says, you've talked a lot about how cord-cutting gives us more control over what we watch, but does not really save us money. I want to point out another option, which I call switchers, although I really hope you can come up with a much catchier name. I actually like switchers. He describes a process where his wife and him watch 1 to 2 hours of programming a night. They usually pick a show and watch it to the end, and then they cancel the subscription if they're not going to continue watching something on that same series. He says, we subscribed to Acorn for a month to catch the seasons of Murdoch Mysteries and canceled it after they were completed. We have heard good things about a TV adaptation of one of my favorite books called Game of Thrones. And now that the series is complete, we will likely subscribe to 1 to 2 months of HBO to watch it. We're considering canceling Netflix during that time. He says, your coverage seems to be of the mind that we need to subscribe to all services at all times that have something we will eventually want to watch. With on-demand programming, binge watching, and a little planning, there is no reason we can't watch what we want, when we want, on whatever device we please, and only pay for the service we are watching at that time. We can pay $20 to $30 per month and see everything we want to.
Tom, you're wrong about one thing. There is a better word than switchers: swingers. These are cord swingers, baby. They're
there. We're changing the name of the show.
Wouldn't that be people who are sharing passcodes?
Those are cord cheaters. I love the idea of cord swinging. And there are different platforms that make it really easy. Now with Apple TV and, of course, with Amazon.com, you can peek in and see what services you're paying for and just uncheck them, easy as can be. Be a cord swinger.
Yeah, and TS, just so you know, I mean, we do tend to lean into saying like, people think they need to subscribe to all these things because that seems to be the prevailing belief out there. And I have been, you know, laboring to come up with a way to explain to people like you don't have to have all the things. And TS explained it so well. Thank you for that.
Dude, I say we call the episode Cord Swingers, and that becomes, I mean, not the show, but certainly this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put that out there, man. If you are somebody who just picks up, runs for a couple months, and says, hey, maybe see you around, you're a cord swinger.
Yeah, I might be back. Don't wait up for me, Netflix.
Kind of a late reply, but here's some behind-the-scenes info about why the Good Fight animated short was censored. The short version is basically it's an episode that was heavily about human rights violations that China is doing and some shady stuff that corporations are doing to try to get China's favor. Jonathan Colton wrote a song that essentially had every censored hot-button taboo word in China subject, Tiananmen Square, Winnie the Pooh, etc. And in an ironic twist, CBS has censored it to stay in China's favor.
Weird. I mean, it's one thing to say, well, we had to censor it in our international broadcast because that goes to China. But why CBS All Access, which is only available domestically in the United States?
It's almost as though they know that a considerable amount of their traffic are coming from people who are firewalling or VPNing in from
possibly,
China.
Possibly. But then if they're VPNing,
that's one of those things where it's like, I am certain that CBS has liaisons, multiple, with the Chinese government. And if they get 6 emails saying, hey, we understand that there's this product and an awful lot of our people, while we can't publicly acknowledge that they're watching your content, are watching your content. We also know that we enjoy our strategic partnership to mutual benefit and hope that you will understand our request that this not exist.
It's just so weird because, you know, companies that do business in China do stuff like this all the time, maybe not to this level. And maybe that's what it was, like putting every hot button word in there got somebody nervous. I don't know the extent of CBS's operations in China, if they have any. I don't know if CNET, for instance, is blocked in China or not. And that is fascinating. Thank you, Andy, for that. And thank you all for watching the show. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack. Also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will swing your cords again next week.
Hoo boy. Hey guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh my gosh, I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors, look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
Classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode and be one of these amazing people. Like this one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.